Hello, and welcome to On the Line. I'm Christy Busby Worsham. This week's episode features retired Marine Staff Sergeant Tyrone Hinton and his wife, Dr. Corinne Hinton, an associate professor of English at Texas A&M University, Texarkana. Tyrone had several combat deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan and sustained injuries. As a result, Corinne became a military caregiver for her husband and works to bring awareness and help to parents, friends, and partners who serve in caregiving roles for veterans. She is an alumni fellow with the Elizabeth Dill Foundation, which is committed to empowering, supporting, and honoring our nation's military caregivers. November is National Veterans and Military Families Month, and to those who have served and sacrificed, we thank you. In this episode, we talked about the Hinton family's journey and experiences, as well as the available resources for military caregivers and veterans. Here is our conversation. Thank you, Tyrone and Corinne, for taking time to meet with us today. Also, thank you for your service to this country, its residents, and its military community. There are 5.5 million caregivers nationwide, and 1.1 million of those caring for post-9/11 veterans that fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. So first, give us a better understanding of the term military caregiver. I know it can be a spouse, parent, or friend, and the support they provide can vary greatly based on each individual's experiences and needs of the relationship. But tell us about the various roles and responsibilities of a military caregiver.
So military caregivers are as diverse and varied as service members and their families can be. We see a variety of disorders, diseases, illnesses, and injuries post-service, some catastrophic and some completely invisible. And so a military caregiver is really any person related or unrelated to the veteran who provides support for that veteran. And that support, as you said, can vary. We usually break them into two primary categories, ADLs, assistance of daily living, and these include things that you might conceive of as necessary that the veteran may not be able to do for themselves, things like bathing or toileting, feeding themselves, that kind of stuff. And then there are IDALs, which really include things like medication reminders, helping make sure the veteran gets to their appointments and makes their appointments. It can be helping make sure that they accommodate the veteran's social triggers. If the veteran has something like post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, it also may be just taking on more of the household responsibilities because the veteran isn't able or doesn't always remember to do things. And that can include child care or house care. And so ultimately, the way in which a caregiver might provide support to their veteran can be completely different. And as you said, the roles can also be different. They are spouses, sure, but they're also unmarried partners. They can happen in same-sex or heterosexual relationships. They can be children caring for parents, parents caring for children, and they can be absolutely unrelated at all. It can be a friend who acts as a caregiver to a veteran in their community when that veteran doesn't have a family member who can step into that role.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about the differences between the pre-9/11 veteran caregiving and the post-9/11 caregiving.
I mean, clearly the biggest difference is going to be the age of the veteran. We also see in a lot of pre-9/11 caregiving situations that it might include more ADLs because those veterans tend to be a bit aged, or they may have dementia, they may have Parkinson's, they may have ASL. And so because of any particular circumstance, pre-9/11 caregivers, by and large, aren't eligible for as much support as post-9/11 veterans are. And unfortunately, that's one of the biggest and most divisive aspects between post-9/11 and pre-9/11 caregivers. Luckily, we're in a situation where the VA is attempting to remedy that support by opening up supports that were previously only available to post 9/11 veteran caregivers and their families to pre 9/11. So, for example, post 9/11 caregivers have been eligible to participate in the PFAC program. That's the program for family assistance and caregivers, I think. Anyway, it's got an acronym, as all things military do. And previously, only post 9/11 caregivers were eligible for support, including stipend. You know, a lot of caregivers pre or post 9/11 may have to leave the workforce or change what their work experience looks like in order to be home and be available. And so that stipend for many families is one of the only supports income-wise that they have. And pre 9/11 caregivers haven't even been eligible to apply for a program like that until now. And the VA is opening it up in stages, providing access first to our eldest veterans and their caregivers. I think it's pre-1973 right now. And then hopefully in the next year or two, they're going to open it up to that sort of middle window where the service window is between 1973 and 2011.
All right. Tell us about your respective upbringings as it relates to the military and how you met and just the service to your country.
So I grew up as a military brat. I joke with everybody and say there's really only 2 years of my 40 years that I haven't been a dependent in the military, which makes it sound like I've never been independent. But I grew up, both my parents served 20 years in the Air Force. My dad and mom met in Hawaii when they were both active duty Air Force. My mom was in legal services. My dad served with OSI, which is the Office of Special Investigations, so sort of like the Air Force's FBI. And they met in Hawaii and married. And then when my mom got pregnant with me, she was still active duty, and they wanted to send them to two different locations. And so they made the choice at that point for my mom to move down to the reserves because my dad had a higher rank and had more years in service. And when she moved down to the reserves, then she could follow him anywhere that he went in order to keep the family together. Because for her, the thought of having a child and raising that child separate from your spouse just wasn't something that they wanted for their family. So they both served 20 years. So I grew up in the Air Force. I was born in New York. My sister was born in the UK. We lived in six different places in the first 10 or 12 years. And my dad retired out of Scott Air Force Base in Southern Illinois. And that's really what the first place that sort of felt like home, where we stayed longer than a 3 or 4 year period. And then so St. Louis and the sort of Belleville, Illinois, shout out Belleville, is the only place that sort of feels like home when people ask, where are you from? And I say, generally nowhere. And then I met Ty in 2005. That feels right. By happenstance. And ironically, I went to go see my parents were living in Florida. I flew to Florida to go see them. We went across the state to go see their friends that they had grown up with in the Air Force, some Air Force colleagues of theirs. They had two boys, and my parents had two girls, and so we kind of grew up as extended siblings. And so one of those extended siblings came down, and we were having a good time, and he said, oh, you know, a Marine buddy of mine, he was in the Marines, a Marine buddy of mine is going to come down, who's stationed out at Lejeune. He's going to come down for the weekend, and it was Ty. So I met him through my parents' best friend's son, who was also his best friend, and that was it. You know, then we were married, I don't know, 7 months later.
Okay. And in the first 5 years of your marriage, there were three combat deployments for Tyrone?
There were. Do you want to talk about those?
Sure. Little background. My dad is Navy. He was in the Navy for 11 years, but I never really knew him in the Navy because my parents split up when I was much younger. So my mom, we lived in Spokane, Washington, and my dad was down in California stationed in those areas. So I didn't come to the military naturally, but it's a family tradition. I'm fourth generation military now that I realize this. But yeah, I joined in the early 90s, mid 90s, and did a couple. We in the Marine Corps, deployments aren't combat. They're just deployments. We deploy about every other year or so in the infantry. So I did, before 9/11 even kicked off, I'd already done three deployments. As a matter of fact, I was deployed in the middle of the Pacific Ocean when 9/11 happened. Our boat went on lockdown. All the Marines gathered all their gear. We got issued ammo, and we turned around and started heading towards the Middle East again. And the only reason why we didn't go there is because we were on the end of our 7 month deployment. So they decided we were tired and wanted to bring us home. So the Mew, the next Mew behind us, had left like 2 days before. So the new Mew, and those were the first Marines that established Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. And I was a combat instructor for the first part of the war at the School of Infantry. And then we stood up a battalion called 1-9. We call them the Walking Dead. They're a very famous battalion from Vietnam era and hadn't been stood up since then. We stood up 1-9, and we were about a quarter of the strength, and they requested a company of us to go over and provide security on an army base in Iraq, and that was in 2006. So I went over, and I was a mobile assault platoon sergeant, or sorry, section leader there. I had five vehicles that were underneath me, and we did combat patrols in the vehicles all over north of Balad in a little place called Ashraf. And I did that for 7 months, 8 months. Came home, didn't have really a long time home. It was less than a year, I think, and then the battalion was all the way stood up. So we did another tour, and I went to Ramadi, Iraq. So I was in Ramadi in 2008 and had lots of fun. Yeah, Ramadi was fun. Not really, but it was an interesting time in Ramadi. And then, because I'm so special, I decided that when I got back that I had to go to a new unit, and I specifically requested the next military unit that was deploying to Afghanistan. So my wife and I moved from North Carolina. I lived in North Carolina. She lived in St. Louis. Came up, picked her up, and we moved our whole house to California. And it was about a year or so until I was supposed to deploy to Afghanistan. But because I was going to Afghanistan, we had to have mountain leaders training. So I was gone from May, June, July. I was in advanced mountain leaders course, and then my battalion came up to do the mountain training. So I stayed with them. So it was almost a full deployment. I was gone for a summer. It was like 5 months. I was gone, came home for Christmas and Thanksgiving, and then turned around and left to Iraq, where I was there for from February to November of 2010. So I guess technically I was part of the big Obama surge. And we fought in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. And that deployment was, out of all of my deployments, I would call that the largest combat deployment. The other ones we got shot at, we had mortars, we had things going on, but Afghanistan was full on the ground, patrolling every day. And, you know, sometimes we go a little while without a firefight, but they would probably happen at the end of the deployment. We moved to a southern position. And it was, I think we got shot at every day, but whether it was organized, you know, stuff or not was a little different.
Okay, thank you. Tell us about your journey in finding a balance between veteran independence and caregiving.
Well, I think it's important first to sort of talk about how we found ourselves in the role to begin with. Most military caregivers don't know the role is coming. So it's not something that you often have a lot of time to prepare for. For some, it's a phone call, you know, sometimes in the early morning or the middle of the night that says your veteran has been injured and they're on their way to, you know, Germany, and we don't know how bad it is, but we'll let you know. And so it becomes that flashpoint where at the time you don't, it's not like you say, oh, I'm going to be a caregiver now, right? It's how is my loved one? How are they doing? Are they going to be alive? You know, what happened? And dealing with being thrust into a situation that then evolves itself into oftentimes a caregiving role. Sometimes it's a veteran who ages and the things that they were living with comfortably devolve, and the caregiving role gets taken on naturally and over a longer period of time. But then you realize, oh, things have changed. Our dynamic has changed and my role in our family has changed. For us, as Ty said, Afghanistan was the most significant injuries that he had faced. He was in the blast of a rocket-propelled grenade attack, an RPG. He went up to go rescue a wounded Marine and was in the blast radius of that RPG and We believe that's the point where he suffered a traumatic brain injury. But like many active duty service members, particularly those who are in direct combat engagement, you know, it was like, I hurt my head. Big deal. Get up. Keep moving. Do what you need to do. He finished the deployment. He finished his service. And it really wasn't until after he retired and moved from life in the military to life out in the civilian world that we started to get a sense that some things that might happen naturally for some people were happening a bit more abnormally. He has been dealing on and off with post-traumatic stress disorder even long before Afghanistan. I think it's a natural relationship that happens whenever you have people who go into unrealistic circumstances that your body and your mind just aren't prepared for. We're not prepared naturally as humans to sort of go into war and face those circumstances. And then, as with a lot of veterans who have both post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury, when those two things sort of come together, they tend to exacerbate each other. And so little things like forgetting his keys, you know, no big deal on an abnormal circumstance, but those things started to happen more regularly, or I was finding the milk in the pantry and things that didn't belong in the fridge in the fridge. And then when he started working, you know, he, like many service members, you get out and you're still young. You know, he was still in his 30s,
40s,
early 40s. And still had plenty of life and work life in front of him. And so he went to school and got trained as a mechanic, a Harley-Davidson mechanic, and started working at Harley-Davidson as a service mechanic. And things were okay, and then they weren't okay. Then it was a bit too much. You know, he was having difficulty moving from project to project. You know, he'd be in the middle of one bike and then they would thrust another one on him and he'd have trouble remembering where he had left off. And I mean, really to his credit, started to recognize that, you know, he was in situations that he couldn't control and asked if he could move from a direct mechanic role into sort of a service writer position, essentially a counter position. And Harley would not support that move. And so at that same time, he was connected with our VA here and seeing his doctor, seeing his psychologist. And so it was really at that point that we were told that we really needed to start considering a different kind of relationship that included a caregiving role, that his inability to sustain himself safely and adequately at work may mean that he couldn't work. And so all these sort of things happened at the same time. His VA rating was reassessed and he essentially ostensibly had to resign from his job. And so all of these things were kind of happening and I was starting to get involved more with appointments because he was having trouble remembering what the doctors were always saying. So all of these things kind of came together and that's really how we found ourselves in that new role. And even though it wasn't a catastrophic injury that sort of resulted in me flying to Germany or whatever to meet him, it was still all of a sudden a shift from we are a two-person mutually partnership, both working, you know, both living our lives to, oh, this is different now. And that was even before my son came into the equation, really. So it was, I think, sudden in a different kind of way. Yeah.
All right. And your family consists of two sons, correct? A 21-year-old and a 6-year-old, is that correct?
A 23-year-old.
23, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I do the same thing all the time. He's that old. Yeah, I have a 23-year-old that was with the previous marriage when I first joined the military. And then, of course, Corinne and I got together and got married, and it was an odd thing. Both of us in the beginning were, nope, no kid. She was very focused on her career and getting her PhD. I was very focused on my career in the military. And it wasn't until I retired and Corinne kind of went, maybe we should have a kid. And it wasn't one of those instant decisions where we decided, yep, we're going to have a kid. It came more of a, oops, she got pregnant. Now we're having another kid. So not oops in that he was unwanted, but oops, it happened way faster than either one of us expected. And so now we have a 7-year-old named Gabriel, who is a bundle of joy.
Mm-hmm. A lot of energy, that kid. Yeah, I was in a, interestingly, Ty and I had a sort of a reversal of the caregiving role. When in 2012, I was in a pretty major motorcycle accident, and Ty had to take care of me. He and my mother took care of me for months before I was able to walk again and you know, get dressed and drive a car. And, you know, I think it was after that, between, you know, Ty's experience in the military and mine in the accident, I was like, you know, I don't want to die alone. I need to have a progeny who's going to take care of me, somebody who feels a slight obligation to stick around. And when Ty says that, well, I'm going to do that, I'm like, no, dude, you're going to be probably in a VA state facility at some point by then. You're not taking care of me. Get out of here.
Subscribe today to the Texarkana Gazette, and you'll get an Apple iPad to use at no charge, plus a Sunday paper delivered to your home. Every day, you'll get an electronic version of the Gazette downloaded directly to your iPad. It's the ultimate home delivery. No more waiting, wet papers, or going out into the cold. And everything you want, the latest news, puzzles, and coupons, is right there. You can zoom in to make articles easier to read, or have the iPad read them to you aloud. Enjoy full-color photo galleries and embedded video content, and access the Gazette's archives back to 2002. For only $29.99 a month, it's a great deal. Call 870-648-1209. That's 870-648-1209 to subscribe to the Texarkana Gazette today.
All right. Now, there are several resources out there, one being the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, of which you are a, what is your title with?
So now technically I'm considered an alumni fellow, meaning I served the 2 years of my active fellowship from 2017 to 2019. But in the Dole Foundation, you're never not a fellow. You know, once you're connected with them and you have an opportunity to meet others and to be advocates and champions for military caregivers, whether that's locally or at the state level or even when we storm the Hill in Washington, D.C., you're never not a fellow. And so we had to find a name for it. So alumni seemed like the right thing. So I'm a fellow alumni for the state of Texas. I was selected, like I said, in 2017 to serve a 2-year term. And so we serve 2-year rotating terms. And it was probably the first experience. Before then, I really still hadn't even known that there was such thing as a military caregiver. I knew my responsibilities. I knew what I did in my house. And I knew how Ty and I sort of created a new normal together. But I didn't have a name for it. And it really wasn't until, by chance, I was scrolling on Twitter and I saw Tom Hanks and I was like, ooh, I like Tom Hanks. And I was listening to the video that he posted and he was talking about, you know, America's military caregivers. And I was like, ooh, what's that? And I clicked and took me to the Dole Foundation and I found out all about this amazing organization started by Senator Elizabeth Dole after she spent some time at Walter Reed with Senator Bob Dole and had the chance to interact with, you know, military spouses and family members and their loved ones who were recuperating and found out that, you know, there just wasn't enough attention and awareness that the role doesn't stop when your loved one leaves the hospital, nor does that stop when they leave the service, right? Once you're connected for a lifetime, but that role looks a little bit different. And it can be very isolating and it can feel very unsupportive. You know, I think we are blessed to live in a country, having just recently celebrated Veterans Day, where we support, for the most part, our military service members. We thank them for their service. You know, we hold parades and barbecues and we give free lunches and we do all the little gestures that try to remind service members that we care, which is a significant measure of progress from the kind of experience that Ty's dad had when he came home from Vietnam. But there hasn't been, up until the Dole Foundation really started working actively, a recognition that military caregivers were even a thing, let alone a population that needed support and needed value and needed to be recognized. And that support can be as simple as, you know, reaching out to your neighbor who you know might be a military caregiver and offering a casserole for one night so they don't have to cook dinner, right? These are not significant changes to be made, but even having an organization that has really shined a light on what they call America's Hidden Heroes. And now the newest initiative is focusing on America's Hidden Helpers. These are the kids who are in military caregiving households, like my son, who from 3 years old would be in the backseat of the car and say, "Now, Daddy, we're going to the store. Try not to get angry at anybody." Or, "Daddy, we're taking a drive. There are going to be other drivers, and they probably won't be good. It's okay," right? He got it very early, earlier than kids should, that, you know, Ty has particular kinds of triggers or situations that make him overly anxious. And he was already trying to relieve some of that anxiety by prepping Ty for what was coming. And it's adorable, but it's also, it shows such an incredible awareness that kids can develop. And they start taking on these roles themselves from the time they're itty bitty to 17 and 18 year olds who are having to decide, do I want to go away for college and leave my family member alone, or leave my veteran with just, you know, my mom or my dad, right? They have served a really prominent role in a lot of their households. And so the decision to leave can be one that's fraught with anxiety and guilt and concern. And they need support too. And they need recognition also.
All right. And you and Gabe just completed a Hidden Heroes walk or run this past weekend or recently?
Yeah, we did. The Dole Foundation had its first ever Hidden Heroes 5K. And of course, in the time of the COVIDs, it was virtual. And so everybody did it kind of on their own and in their own time. And so Gabe and I had a good walk in and ride around the neighborhood and earned our medals. And it was a good time to sort of be together. We're excited to move into what we hope is a new post-COVID normal that will allow the Dole Foundation Fellows to resume their work in Washington, D.C. We typically do a week's worth of events in Washington, D.C. every year, and we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. So next year is the 10th anniversary, and we hope to have a lot of events, including some things in person where we can celebrate the achievements of Hidden Heroes, but also, say thank you to the any number of organizations and partners and coalition partners that help the Dole Foundation make their work what it is.
Okay. And I'm sure the foundation has been very instrumental in, I guess, linking that community of caregivers across the nation.
Yeah, it's been essential. Not only is it through the face-to-face opportunities, but they also work very hard to create state and local partnerships. And, we have some amazing caregivers that are doing nonprofit work and connecting the Dole Foundation through that nonprofit work. But also there's an incredible online community. You know, some of us live in less developed areas. And, there isn't a whole lot out. You know, even in Texarkana, there isn't anything for military caregivers specifically. You know, there are some veterans-focused things, and even those are a little bit few and far between. We have some organizations like DAV and VFW, but as far as like nonprofit support directly for veterans, there isn't a whole lot of that, and there certainly isn't anything for military caregivers. And so I rely, as many do who are in more rural-facing areas or less areas where there's less military or caregiver support, to find each other online. And so the Dole Foundation has the Hidden Heroes Facebook page, which is exclusive to military caregivers. We share information and resources. We connect each other. Some of my best friends I've met through the Dole Foundation, through the Fellows Program, and being able to sort of go from someone who needs support and needs help and needs answers to somebody who can provide answers and provide support to new caregivers just now taking on that role. It's a reciprocal model that I think works really effectively, because unless you're doing it every day, it's difficult to understand, and it's certainly difficult to provide support unless you've sort of been there, done that.
And how many caregivers would you estimate are in the Texarkana region area?
Yeah, so that's difficult because I think for the large part, if we consider what we know about our veteran demographics in the area, we have a higher percentage of what we might consider pre-9/11 veterans. We have a lot of aged veteran population. I'd say it's difficult because our caregiver population, at least that's tied to the VA, is out of Shreveport. And so it's especially difficult in our area because they're really serving four states, right? And so it's hard to say, okay, who's in Texarkana specifically and who's in the outer regions. And quite frankly, we don't know, because the city hasn't really sort of undertaken an attempt to understand how many of us there are. I know of at least 20 through my work on campus and being sort of affiliated with our Veterans Services Office and being connected to veterans that way, and through doing events that happen in the city and sort of meeting people casually. But there hasn't been a formal undertaking to get a sense of how many of us there are.
All right. And for those who are out there possibly listening or know someone who is a caregiver, where should they go for help or resources?
So I'd say a couple of things. As far as infrastructural support, if you haven't already, get connected with the VA, whether that's one of our CBOCs in the community or the VA Medical Center in Shreveport. There's social workers and a caregiver support team where they can give you an incredible amount of information. Not just the stipend program, but there's also respite care. There's also other additional benefits and resources that caregivers can get access to. And through the VA in Shreveport, they also do a couple of caregiver events once or twice a year, sometimes in Shreveport, and sometimes they'll do something a little bit closer to Texarkana. And certainly the other thing is to get connected online. What's nice about online support mechanisms like the Hidden Heroes group on Facebook is, you know, it's 24/7, right? You can always throw a question out there, and chances are within 24 hours, you've got 60 people have responded with their experiences and their knowledge. And I mean, knowledge is power. The VA is a bureaucracy. Navigating the caregiver life can be difficult. It's been the way we found out about nonprofit programs that we've gotten connected with. We, over the summer, went through a Project Sanctuary retreat for families, for veterans and caregiving families. And it was a pretty incredible experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, the experience we did this summer with Project Sanctuary, not only did it help with our family, but they gave me a resource, because I do struggle with PTSD quite a bit, which I just completed last week. I did a week-long in what they call post-traumatic growth seminar, basically, in Georgia. It's called Camp Southern Ground, Warrior Path. And they go through basically military trauma in whatever way they can, and it's for combat vets. And they help you find alternative ways to deal with it than just going to the VA and getting your medication or doing your immersive training or whatever the VA wants you to do. So without Corinne being part of the Hidden Heroes Network, we never would have found out about Project Sanctuary. I never would have found out about Camp Southern Ground. And I've even referred one of my friends in town that I think would really benefit from the program. So her being involved in a caregiver community has led us to other things that enrich our lives, both as a family and for me as an individual. And her as an individual getting support from other caregivers that she can relate to. You know, it's really nice to be able to realize that there are people out there that are experiencing the same things you are. It was really beneficial for me to see a lot of these veterans. We went through a cohort of eight to realize that my experiences in the military weren't singular. And the way that I deal with my experiences is not singular either. And I think the same thing goes for Corinne, is being able to connect with a caregiver across the nation that is dealing with her husband who is, you know, literally, I would used to drive my son to school in the mornings and he'd come to work with me. And my kid would be like, why am I at your work, Dad? I'm like, oh, shit, that's right. You're supposed to go to school. So, you know, it's scary things like that. There are times that I'm walking around the house and I'll be standing in my living room not remembering why I'm there. And relying on Corinne to help me, I call her my rememberer. She's the one that's supposed to help me remember what's going on. But it's incredibly frustrating with her because she's remembering her life. She's remembering her son's life. Now she's remembering my life. And to be able to interact with other caregivers and other peoples that can relate to that very specific niche that not a lot of people have experience in, I think that helps all of us in letting us deal with the differences of where our life is now from what we expected. I mean, I never expected to be 47 years old and completely retired, not working, and basically I like to call myself a house husband. I'm the guy that stays at the house. I try to clean up as much as I can and help go to the store or do things when I'm able. And so it's definitely a different role than what I expected when I first retired.
All right. And Corinne, I know that a lot of your professional life has been spent steeped in research as an educator. And I know that you've also contributed articles to the Journal of Veteran Studies and the Journal of Military, Veteran, and Family Health on military caregiving. So talk to me about RAND. That's a research-based effort that started about military caregivers in 2014. And I believe they're starting a new round of research upcoming.
Absolutely. The partnership between the Elizabeth Dole Foundation and RAND has been an incredibly important partnership because the Dole Foundation wants to work not only singularly, but with its partners in nonprofit spaces and government. And we want to do it thoughtfully and mindfully. And research is really how we get there. We have to understand, for example, the first RAND study that was commissioned was really trying to figure out who and where are our military caregivers, because we didn't know. We didn't know what the numbers looked like. We didn't know where they were. We didn't know their demographic characteristics or their veterans' characteristics, what they needed, what challenges they faced. And so that initial RAND study was really designed to help propel the initial programs and services and areas of support by at least getting a sense of like how widespread. You know, you started by saying that there are 5.5 million caregivers, and it's an incredible number, and not all of them are recognized. Not all of them are even connected to the VA. And so trying to figure out the unique and also shared lived experiences of those caregivers is essential in order to try and figure out where we put our most attention. And as with being a caregiver and our veteran population and the conflicts that they're involved in and the situations in which they find themselves, it continues to evolve, which is why doing subsequent RAND studies has also been important. From that second RAND study came the caregiver journey map. And that journey map that the Dole Foundation developed was a really long and involved process that had to take into account caregivers' experiences. And essentially, the caregiver journey map is something I would give to a nonprofit group or to a government agency to say, this is a really basic idea of what the caregiver experience might be like. And it goes from, you know, finding yourselves in situations of sort of tumultuousness where you might get thrown back, right? You find a path and you get comfortable and then something happens and you get thrown out of whack again, whatever that might be. And it's been really useful for audiences that don't necessarily understand what the caregiver life is like or know a caregiver in order to understand it. And now the newest RAND study that's been commissioned has been focused on the children in military caregiving households, from the youngest to the oldest, and from 5 to 25, and to get a sense of what that community looks like and what those needs are. We already have some incredible partnerships with organizations like Sesame Street that come out with videos and specialized resources for our younger children. There are summer camps and yearly camps available for some military and veteran children. But like any household, not everybody has access or not everybody can spare the time. And so trying to get a sense of what our hidden helpers' lives look like and how we can support them as they grow up in through a military caregiving household into their own individual lives and into their goals. You know, research is really sort of at the foundation of the decisions that are made. And I think it's absolutely critical. You know, as a researcher myself, collecting anecdotal and qualitative experiences from caregivers, from their families, from their veterans, and from their children is really essential in order to help make the most significant impact in the most timely way.
All right. Thank you. And again, just the ways or the websites or places that people should go if they are interested in learning more and finding help themselves as in roles as caregivers.
Yeah, so hiddenheroes.org is the place to start. And it's the place to start because it has one of the most useful tools, I think, is a repository of resources. So you can go in through hiddenheroes.org and register, and then along the left-hand side toolbar on that page, you can sort by any number of things. Let's say you're looking for financial support because you need to turn your bathroom into something that's ADA compliant for your veteran. There are resources available for that, and you can sort of put that in and it will filter it out. Or if you're looking for financial assistance because you've had an employment setback, you've had to leave your job in order to be at home to take care of your veteran, you know, there are organizations like Semper Fi Fund and others that can help close the window by, you know, paying your power bill or paying your mortgage just for that month so that you can kind of get yourself back on your feet. But finding access to those resources, as Ty said, I never would have been able to find places like Project Sanctuary. He would not have been able to find places like Warrior Path at Camp Southern Ground without being able to have a repository of those available to see what's out there. And HiddenHeroes.org pulls all of these resources together. They've been vetted. They are partners through the Dole Foundation. These are not organizations that are going to, you know, take your money and take your information and rip you off, right? These are vetted organizations. And you can search by something local, something that's in Texas, something that serves national populations. You can sort by pre or post 9/11, you know, there's any number of filters that you can use in order to at least sort of start that. And in addition, the Dole Foundation itself provides support. So sometimes respite is essential. Self-care, trying to make sure that caregivers are taking care of themselves. It's difficult. It's difficult to find that time. And respite care is a really impactful way to be able to hit the pause button while also leaving your veteran in the care of a knowledgeable, trustworthy person. And so the Dole Foundation has respite applications that you can fill out that will give you a certain number of hours per month that you can utilize. And they can either come into the home and do things in the home like cleaning or helping support your veteran, or if you have a veteran who doesn't want somebody in the house, that happens, then they can go out and do the shopping, right? You can give them a shopping list and they'll go out and do the shopping and bring it back, or they can do meal prep or things like that. And so, you know, giving caregivers access to support that makes sense for them is really at the crux of what the Dole Foundation does, and HiddenHeroes.org is a really great place to start. There are also some other caregiving organizations, AARP, which the Dole Foundation has a relationship with. AARP has a lot of good resources, including financial planning. A lot of caregiving situations completely throws off your household finances. And if you are not somebody that has a really strong sense of financial literacy, there are programs and support mechanisms out there that can help give caregivers and their families the tools they need to put a plan, immediate plan, into place, but also to be looking for the future. I also recently was invited to be a guest through the PsychArmor program. PsychArmor provides online training, not just for caregivers, but for nonprofit groups, for agencies that might work with caregivers and need to know what that life is like. They have a whole series of modules that are educational. I recently participated in a caregiving connections workshop on intimate partner violence in caregiving families. But PsychArmor as a whole has a whole bunch of classes that are designed both for military-affiliated and non-military affiliated organizations so that they can get a sense of, like, what caring for a veteran might be like and how they can fold those best practices into the work that they do.
That's great that there's so many resources out there, and thank you for sharing that with us. All right. Okay, well, thank you so much for making time to come and visit with us here and educate us and hopefully help people who are listening find the help that they need for themselves and their veteran. And thank you so much.
No, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on The Line.